Hello.
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 Hello, can you hear
Hello.
me?
Hello.
Hello, it's
It's
me.
me.
I love how we both
Literally,
have the same type of
we're
jokes, bro.
the same person, Karita. We hang out too much, bitch.
Bro, I'm telling. What is that shit like? Psychic, not telepathic, or fucking what is that
Yeah.
shit when you read other people's minds?
Yeah.
Telesoleology. I don't know.
Let's just move on.
Okay, but you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We don't, but yeah, we do.
Oh my God. It's one of those superpowers, bro, that you just read. Okay, X-Men. That
Telekinesis?
fuck. Yeah, there you go. What the fuck did I say?
Telekinesis or
Telekinesis.
telekapaboo? Like, bitch, I don't know what the fuck you're saying. Tele sabe que? Sabe que la chingada?
But what up, guys?
What's up, guys? Hey, we're
What
back.
up? We're back for part two.
Part
Ew, what the fuck? Why did I say it like that?
two.
That's kind of,
We're
I was a
back
little
for
too
part
excited, bro.
two.
We're back for part two, guys. And this is part two.
Bro, get it together, Karina. We're
Okay, this is
professional
part
here.
two of the Steven Stainer case.
Yes.
Yes. And this one is a very interesting episode.
Yes, and Karina is gonna read it, but we do want to give a disclaimer, like, again, kind of like how we did before. We do talk about very crazy, fucked up things in this, so please take care of yourselves, and if you don't want to listen, we understand.
If you
Before we
wanna, if you don't wanna listen, at least leave a little comment if you know what I mean.
like and rate us, please.
Was telling Irma today, I was like, one, I think like I talk a little bit too much. I'm not gonna lie, I've noticed that about myself. See, I don't catch myself until like I'm done with a conversation. I'm like, holy shit, I spent like an hour talking to this one person. Stupid shit.
Dude.
Like, shut the fuck up already.
No, I think I speak for everyone. We love to hear you talk. Especially me, bitch.
I talk a lot. I talk a lot. Then I'm just gonna have to start talking to my dog.
Poor Yoshi.
Do it right. Okay, if anyone knows kind of a little bit of psychology or whatever, why do I talk a lot?
Karina, thought you don't
Dude,
talk a lot. That's why you have a podcast, so you can talk all day.
right. Guys, if you guys want to hear us talk about random shit, if you guys want to, you know, that second podcast or whatever, not that we like are super on top of this one, but
One day we'll
it's
get it together.
possible one day, you know, we can do like a
Y'all stay
random ass.
doubting
And
us.
honestly, like, have some awesome ass topics that I would love to talk about. I know people are shaking right now.
Shaking in their boots because, like, ooh, the
Ooh,
other
what does
student
Karina got to
podcast here.
say? I don't know. Tune in for our second podcast
Ooh,
that
wee,
might
scary. That's scarier than our fucking podcast.
my bully from second grade shaking right now.
You're mad though.
I still remember you, dog. I still fucking remember you and the shit you fucking did to me.
Oh, we should
Anyways, you guys.
introduce ourselves.
Yes, so our podcast, if you have not noticed, is another spooky podcast with your favorite co-host, Karina Reyes, and
Irma Cornejo. Sorry for the noise in the background. I have an AC on because it's hot. It's like 80
Oh,
degrees still.
no,
It's 10 p.m. and it's fucking
all
80
right,
degrees.
Irma, play the motherfucking beat, yo. I think Ramon needs some vocals in there, and I might just like
I can't. It's another spooky podcast.
I might just volunteer or whatever. Another spooky podcast. You said you were gonna listen, but you never fucking did. So now I cry in my room at night. 2 a.m. and I'm banging on your line.
Ramon's gonna tell us to not use his music anymore. Bro, shout out to Ramon, though. Thank you for the music. It's amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much. You've been making lyrics. Yeah, I'm telling you, Ramon, if you ever need our volunteer work over here, I'm willing to
vocals over here.
Yeah, but I wanted to share some of my vocals and start my career.
I'm a DJ or whatever, so if you need some beats, hit me.
I mean, you might just need to auto-tune this shit, you know, but I'm pretty sure it's workable. It's manageable.
We could work something out.
Nothing that like auto-tune can't fix, you know.
No.
I don't know, guys. When people talk shit about attitude, I bring up T-Pain, I bring up myself. You're like, gonna be like, can this bitch se baja de su burro, please? Have you guys ever heard that saying?
No.
My mom would always bring it up to me because I'll, you know, I'll act like I'm all that. And she like, te puedes bajar de tu pinche burro? I'm like, bro, I want to be high up here, bro. Burro? You mean horse? I'm on a stallion, girl. Anyways, guys, hopefully you guys liked a little bit of our stories of our daily lives. But unfortunately, this is not one of those type of podcasts. This is a spooky podcast. So we're going to go ahead and start with our main episode. We are going to be continuing from our last episode, which is on the case of Steven Stainer. And we do have a little surprise case at the end, if you guys keep tuning into the end. So let's start. So for this episode, we're going to be talking about the kidnapping of Steven Stainer and Timothy White. So as Irma had talked about in our last episode, Kenneth Parnell kidnapped Steven Stainer from Merced, California at the age of 7 years old on December 4th of 1972 during his captivity. Steven Stainer was raped and molested every night by Kenneth Parnell. As mentioned in part 1, Kenneth changed Steven's name to Dennis Gregory Parnell as a way to make sure that people wouldn't really recognize him. So by doing this, obviously Parnell would treat Steven like a son, even force Steven to call Kenneth dad, which again was kind of like a way of not causing any suspicion and causing people not just to talk about it. And obviously not a lot of people are going to question something like that. So obviously they did a really good job, at least kind of did, at hiding this from a lot of people. But also because it was super devastating and weird that Kenneth was Steven's abuser and kidnapper all along. So again, if you guys missed out on episode 1, we do go into detail about how Steven was kidnapped and how he ended up in the hands of the awful and obviously evil ass bitch Kenneth. Also, Steven has a loving family back in Merced, so hoping he is alive, so they never lost faith in looking for their son, even though they didn't know what happened to Steven. During Steven's captivity, he was told by Kenneth that his family no longer wanted him and gave Kenneth full custody of Steven. So this was a way, again, of not causing any suspicion, which is really fucked up. Because that was not the case and absolutely not true. Kenneth did move around California a lot, and every time he moved, he would enroll Steven into his new school and under the name Dennis Gregory Parnell. So they never got caught, and unfortunately never got caught. I don't know how the schools didn't look into this. It's so weird.
Yeah, that's what I said too when I was reading it. I was just like, you guys don't ask for birth certificates. You guys don't ask for, stuff like that. Maybe it was a different time.
I don't know. I guess not, dude. Because when I went to school, I mean, I don't know the process for these schools. But that's a really shitty job, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So Steven eventually began getting used to the fact that he was, quote-unquote, you know, Kenneth's son and Kenneth with his new dad. And years began to pass. And obviously, with all the brainwashing, and poor Stephen was under the impression that his family had abandoned him, he only had Kenneth. So
lots of manipulation.
Yeah, for sure. In late 1973, about 9 months into Stephen's kidnapping, Kenneth met some fucked up woman named Barbara Matias, who was a single mother who had just left her abusive husband. Her and her kids ended up moving in with Kenneth and Stephen, and she was Stephen's quote-unquote mom during captivity, like, for about 2 years while she was dating Kenneth. She was a fucked up woman and also took advantage of Stephen. And Stephen later recalls that she also partook in his abuse and also ended up raping him during his captivity. Bro, I read on this too, that he had a fucking girlfriend.
Yeah. Fucking
Kenneth was fucking sick, bro. Fucking monster, bro. That bitch was too.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, she later says, like, oh, I didn't know he was kidnapped. But, like, it was obvious that, like, Kenneth was sketchy, you know, and the fact that she even partook in these activities is so fucked up. Like, even if they weren't kidnapped. Lie about it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you didn't know he was kidnapped, why would you even, like, do something so nasty? Like,
that's going to make it even better for what she did. Exactly. Uh-huh.
It's so fucked up. Like, that bitch, like, I think she did it, like, save herself, you know? Like, she knew something was sketchy.
I mean, either way, she was going to get... jail time, bro. Jail time.
Yeah, but she didn't get any jail time. She didn't end up getting convicted or anything.
How is that even logical? Like, hey, you know what? I live such a hard life with my ex-husband. Let me just go into another fucking shitty-ass situation, which is probably even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And bring my children along with me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's also, like, that cycle of abuse, you know, like, that a lot of women. But that's no justification for her to, like, rape Stephen.
Right. Like,
at the end of the day, she made those decisions, and that was on her. And she's fucked up for that.
Yeah, like, even with abuse and trauma and everything, there are definitely more routes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm saying this, I don't know, maybe because I'm not sympathizing towards her right now, but she definitely had a different route that she could have taken in order to live a better life. Absolutely. And Barbara ended up leaving Kenneth, and it is rumored that she loved Kenneth because he tried to abuse one of her younger sons. Unfortunately, she was never charged for anything, and she even had the nerve to visit Stephen's family after he escaped.
Yeah, I was reading an article, and, like, it was saying that, like, she showed up at their door and was saying, like, oh, I was, like, his mom. Like, trying to play, like, the good guy in this. And it's like, dude, you literally partook in his abuse. Like, you are not the good person here. Like, you should have helped him knowing how fucking shitty Kenneth was. And the fact that you took it in that abuse, like, you're a shitty person, too.
And she only left because it had to do with her son.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that she had no sympathy for Stephen because he wasn't her biological son.
Exactly.
But when it came to her biological son, then it became, like, a really big deal. What a fucking piece of shit, bro. What the fuck?
I think I was reading something about how Barbara ended up meeting Kenneth because Stephen was friends with her son. So that's how they met. And the fact that, like, she didn't even, like, care for Stephen or, like, try to stop that abuse. She even partook in it, even though he was the same age as one of her kids. That's really fucked up, you know?
That's really traumatizing, I guess, for both sides of the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not talking about fucking Barbara and kind of stupid ass bitch. I'm talking about the kids. Her kids seeing the abuse happen, and I don't blame the kids because at the end of the day, they're just kids and they don't know
victims too
much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously, like, they're kids. So for them to see, you know, their friend going through abuse, and Stephen to see their friend kind of not experiencing that, that has to be really, really traumatizing. This is tough. I'm not going to lie.
It is. It's a really hard case, honestly. Stephen suffered a lot, and yeah, it's a really hard case to get through.
Yeah. Okay, so anyways, so she ended up leaving Kenneth, and for the next 4 years, it was just Stephen and Kenneth again. So as Irma had mentioned in part one, Kenneth began to tell Stephen he wanted a younger boy because Stephen was getting older and he was about 14 at the time, and Kenneth was just a fucking sick ass pedophile, and he wanted Stephen to help him out kidnap another boy. But Stephen knew how this would turn out because obviously the same thing happened to him, and he did not want a younger boy to suffer the way that he did in the hands of Kenneth's sick ass bitch. Such a hero. Like, even though he was put in such a hard position, because I'm pretty sure that's really scary, you know, kind of going against your abuser, your kidnapper, and trying to sabotage his plan. And kind of risk his own life, because I feel like Kenneth could have easily gotten rid of him.
Yeah, and I think that might have happened if like Kenneth wasn't able to kidnap Timothy later on. The fact that Steven, like you said, he's a hero. He really tried to protect other people from suffering the way that he had to. And he's really a hero.
When Kenneth noticed that Stephen wasn't able to be successful with finding him a younger boy, he began to get very frustrated, and I guess he decided to just enlist the help of someone else, kind of like how Edward Murphy helped Kenneth kidnap Stephen. So it was like another cycle that repeated itself. He ended up befriending Stephen's friend, and this is where we go into the kidnapping of Timothy White and the Great Escape. So this occurred on February 14, 1980 in Ukiah, California, which for reference is 237 miles from Merced, about a 3 hour drive from where Stephen was originally kidnapped. Timothy, who also went by Timmy White, who was 5 years old at the time of the kidnapping, was walking home from school when he saw 14-year-old Randall Sean Poorman fixing his car. Randall was pretending to have car troubles as a way to lure in young boys, and that's how he got the attention of Timmy when he was walking home. Randall tried to grab Timmy when he was getting close, but Timmy was able to escape and began running. But unfortunately, as I mentioned, Timmy was only 5 years old and Randall was 14, so Randall was able to catch up to Timmy. And sad thing is, Timmy was obviously super scared and he was trying so hard to get away from Randall. But at one point, when Randall caught up to him, Timmy was holding on for dear life to a chain link fence so he wouldn't be abducted. Timmy was eventually brought back to Kenneth's home, where Stephen was also held captive. And Stephen, who was 14 at the time of Timmy's kidnapping, kind of took on the role of an older brother to Timmy, especially when he saw how distressed the 5-year-old Timmy was, and because he knew how fucked up Kenneth was. So Stephen really tried really hard to take care of Timmy and protect him as much as he could.
It's just so
Poor,
sad. He was
just,
so
yeah,
little.
I know. Poor Stephen and poor Timmy. Stephen, because he tried really hard for the same situation that happened to him not to happen again to someone else. So I can just imagine when he found out that fucking Kenneth was actually successful to get another boy. When Steven saw Timmy and how young and scared he was, he decided that he needed to help him before Kenneth began abusing him, like how Kenneth had abused him for the last 7 years. 2 weeks after Timmy's abduction on March 1st, 1980, Steven decided today would be the day that he would do something and he would help return Timmy to his parents. When Kenneth left to work, Stephen told Timmy they needed to leave, so they began walking towards Ukiah, which was pretty far away. And obviously, Timmy got really tired, pretty quick, actually, because he was seven. I mean, I'm sorry, he was five. So Stephen carried him on his back for a while. Oh, I can't.
Dude, Steven is amazing. Like, he
Stephen.
really was determined to save Timmy. Like, he's a hero, honestly.
Yes, I agree. But then decided that their best option was to hitchhike into town, which they ended up doing. Steven's original plan was that once they got to Ukiah, he would take Timmy to his home. But Steven was unfamiliar with the town, and Timmy didn't know how to get home. So when Stephen decided it was just best if he took Timmy to the police station and he would just walk in and say who he was, because it was such a recent kidnapping and everyone was looking for Timmy. So Stephen knew the cops would recognize Timmy. When they got to the police station, Stephen waited outside as Timmy ran in. The cops were shook because this was just the 5-year-old who went missing and the whole town was looking for. And then the cops realized that a 14-year-old kid had dropped him off, and they originally thought Stephen was involved with Timmy's kidnapping, so they brought him in for questioning. That's when Stephen said, "I think my name is Stephen," quote unquote. Remember, Stephen had been kidnapped for 7 years. Kenneth told him his new name was Dennis Parnell, so Stephen couldn't remember his full name. All he knew was his name might have been Stephen, and he was kidnapped in Merced by Kenneth Parnell.
Side note, so there's actually a movie about Stephen's kidnapping, and I think it's called I Think My Name is Stephen. So if you guys want to go check that out, go check it out.
The cops ended up arresting Kenneth for the kidnapping of Stephen Stainer and Timothy White, which he was later convicted to in 1981. Kenneth was sentenced to 7 years and was paroled after serving 5 years. Unfortunately, he never was convicted of the rape of Stephen. Kenneth was a piece of shit until he died. Towards the end of his life, he tried to buy a 4-year-old in 2004 for $500 from a caregiver who told the cops, and he got arrested and convicted for 25 years to life, and he was in custody until he died of natural causes at the age of 89 in 2008. That is quite recently, but not really, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it feels recent, but then you realize that that was a while ago.
Yeah, that's when I was like, wait, that's kind of recent, but not recent. So Kenneth's accomplices, Edward Murphy and Randall Sean Poorman, were tried and convicted to lesser charges and barely served any time. Fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. That within itself is such a shame.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any better. Mm-mm. Because they both had to do with the kidnapping. Like, why?
And I feel like Kenneth should have got a longer time. Like, he only served 5 years for kidnapping Stephen for 7 freaking years and then kidnapping another kid.
That's and a fucking slap to the face, dude. Oh my god, bro.
It's so fucked up, dude. So fucked up. But like, he eventually did go back to prison, but like, it's just really fucked up. Like, they could have avoided all that, you know?
I don't know, dude. Sometimes I just, like, really wonder what goes on behind these cases when it comes to, like, the court system. Because why the fuck would you let a high-profile pedophile out again to the streets?
Mm-hmm.
When this motherfucker had kidnapped not one, probably more than two at this point. I feel like he did some other shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, you're just gonna get a little slap on the wrist, like, you know 5 years. Mm-hmm. you're gonna learn your lesson. Obviously not. This dude has a fucking problem.
Yeah,
definitely. But on the side note, during Steven's captivity, Kenneth had given him a dog named Quinny, and Steven loved his dog. I bet after being like kind of locked up, so fucking lonely with a fucking piece of shit like Kenneth.
Yeah,
I'm glad he was able to find some type of comfort in something. So yeah. But when he escaped, he had to leave her there because it was too risky. But when Stephen was saved at the police station, he asked them if he can get Quinny back, so if the police can go get her back, and they did. So that's on a good note, right? That's a little
bit. We love that for him.
Yeah, that's very comforting. And I mean, pets are just unconditional when it comes to their love. So
yeah,
I'm happy that at least he had some sort of happiness when it came to that. Anyways, Stephen and Timmy were safe, and they did not live very long, unfortunately, and they both died at a very young age. Stephen Stainer died tragically on September 16, 1989, at the age of 24, from a motorcycle accident, and so many people attended his funeral, including 14-year-old Timmy. Timmy, on the other hand, died on April 1st, 2010, at the age of 35, from a pulmonary embolism.
And I think that's just like a blockage of the lungs, like an artery in the lungs.
So before their deaths, Stephen and Timmy worked with adopted and abused children. And on August 28, 2010, a statue honoring Stephen Stainer and Timothy White in Applegate Park in Merced. And the statue is that of Stephen holding the hand of young Timothy. And this statue was made by people in Ukiah, which was Timothy's hometown. That was a very intense case. I'm not gonna lie. I am very, very sad that they both passed away at such a young age. Mm-hmm. But everyone has different perspectives of this. I mean, I'm gonna get heat by this, but Stephen went through so much with Kenneth, so much with Kenneth, and so much abuse and trauma. And even with all the resources, I'm pretty sure that he had, and all the help psychologically, you know, his family that he was reunited with again. And you can't really forget those type of stuff. You can't really forget much when things like that had happened to you in the past. And, you know, maybe it was just his time to go and rest and kind of leave the trauma as, you know, that life that he lived. And unfortunately, I would have loved that he would have survived way longer than that and actually get to experience, you know, what it's like to, I guess, quote unquote, live a normal life. But I don't know, things just happen for a reason, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I think both of their deaths are very tragic. Like they, like you said, they went through so much at such a young age. Like Stephen had to grow up so fast, and it's really fucked up. Like for me, I think the thing that was like the hardest to listen to was that both Timmy and Stephen died at very young ages, and then Kenneth's piece of shit self got to live until 89. I just don't understand how that works, obviously, and I think it's just really fucked up and so tragic. But at the end of the day, people, when people remember this case, they remember Stephen and they remember Timothy, and that's why they had that statue honoring them, because they just be honored, you know, they're heroes.
Yeah, I can't even put words to it, but something that they were able to get, like, to go through something so negative and convert it somehow into something positive is so telling of them as people. Like you said, people will remember them as heroes. People will remember them with strength. People would see them as two kids who went far and beyond to do the right thing and get themselves out of this situation. Stephen is always going to be a hero. They will always be remembered, and I think that's the beauty of it, that they will, quote unquote, not technically die, right? Because their spirit and them as people will always be talked about.
So important to talk about, like you said, to live, like, have their legacy live on. And if you guys are in Merced or a nearby area, you guys should go check out the statue. I lived in Merced for a while and I didn't know about this case, so it was really interesting to like find it now. And if I go back to Merced, I'm definitely gonna go check out that statue. So I'm gonna go ahead and take over for this part. And I don't know if you guys remember, but last week I kind of brought up that the Yosemite serial killer was associated or tied to this case in a way. So we're gonna talk about that, because this is where the crazy plot twist comes in, y'all. Like, y'all ain't fucking ready for this plot twist. It's crazy. So it turns out, unfortunately, that Stephen's brother, Cary Stainer, is the Yosemite killer. And I know that's crazy to think about, because in a family, you have a hero, Stephen, who went through so much, something so crazy in his life, and he died a hero. And then you have someone else in the family, Cary, who just did horrible things to this world. Horrible things. And it's just crazy how different people within a family are. I'm just going to like talk about Cary briefly, because at the end of the day, we, Karina and I, decided that we wanted to focus these two episodes on the heroes in the case, not the horrible people in this case. So I'm just going to briefly talk about it. I'm not going to go into depth, because I don't think Cary needs that spotlight on him. So
deadass.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that's why what he wanted. I think he wanted to, like, be in the spotlight, how he saw Steven being in the spotlight, which is really fucked up.
Now that you bring up that point, yeah, I see it.
Like, I feel like he's low-key like a narcissist, like trying to be a part of it, but...
Or because, like, obviously his parents, a lot of their time went into finding their son.
That's true.
I can definitely see why the possibility of Carrie feeling like left out, unloved, not having that attention. But like Irma had mentioned earlier, in the case of Barbara, there's no justifying the actions that they took because they could have done something different with their lives. But yeah, that's the route that they decided to take.
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
and like,
and I just feel bad for the parents. Oh,
I know, I know. Like, and I feel like that sucks for Steven too, because he's a hero, and I know that they were gonna name the Applegate Park in Merced after him, after Steven. They were gonna name it the Steven Thayner Park, but because Carrie was also associated with that last name, they didn't want that park to be associated with a serial killer. So he kind of ruined that for Steven. But anyways, let me just go briefly into the case. So in 1999, Carrie Thayner worked as a handyman at the Cedar Lodge Motel in El Portal, California, I think that's what it's called, which is the entrance of Yosemite Park. On February 15, 1999, Carrie noticed 42-year-old Carol, okay, I'm going to pronounce her last name wrong, and I'm so sorry, Carol Snud, and her 15-year-old daughter, Julie, and a family friend, a friend of Julie's, who was also 15, Delvina Beloso, were staying in the room alone in the Cedar Lodge Motel where Carrie worked. He then decided to brutally murder these three women. He ended up going to the door and telling them he was a worker and he needed to fix a water leak in the room. Because he was a worker, Carol let him in, believing that there was a water leak. And once he was inside, he immediately strangled Carol, which was the mother, and then he sexually assaulted the teen girls. He then put Carol's body in the trunk of her rental car, and he killed Selvina and put her body along with Carol's in the trunk. For whatever reason, Carrie Thayner ended up taking Julie to a different location, which was Lake Don Pedro near Mocasino, California, which is about an hour and a half, about 62.4 miles away from Yosemite, where he slashed her throat and dumped her body. The women were reported missing, and Carrie Thayner was questioned because he did work at the lodge, but police didn't believe that he could have done it, because he was a well-mannered man, and they were like, there's no way this guy did it. So they kind of just let it slide. So the bodies of Carol, Selvina, were found on March 19, 1999, because they were in the trunk. So they ended up finding the rental car, and they found their body in there. And Julie was not found until March 25th, 1999. Because again, she was in a different location. Carrie ended up getting away with the crime for a bit. And then on July 22nd, 1999, just a couple months after his first murders, Carrie decided to brutally murder 26-year-old Joey Armstrong, who was staying alone in her cabin in the Yosemite Forest region. They ended up finding Joey's body, and to everyone's shock, they found her in a horrible way, Karina. Like, they found her decapitated. Everyone was shocked.
Oh my gosh. I don't... Okay, side note. I'm pretty sure he did this shit just to get back at his brother. Because his brother was seen as a hero. And he could not stand the fact that... Like I mentioned, that... I'm not saying this is, like, in the fact, right? Because I don't know the dude and what he was thinking at that time. But just, like, a possible... My theory is that he was trying to get back at his brother. He was probably jealous as fuck and probably mad as fuck to resent. He had a lot, probably had a resentment towards his brother. So he probably wanted to ruin that image too of his brother being a hero.
Yeah, like he wanted to take the spotlight and put it on him, which is fucked up. It's fucked up. Like, if he really wanted to make an impact, he could have done it in a positive way. He could have helped his brother help children. You know, there's like other ways. Like, you don't need to be a serial killer. But anyways, this sparked a panic because the murders of Carol, Julie, and Selvina were so recent in the park. and everyone feared that there was a Yosemite serial killer, and unfortunately there was. And the FBI got involved, and they began questioning people in the area, like the workers at the Cedar Lodge Motel. And they did end up questioning Carrie Stainer, and they even searched his truck. But again, he wasn't ever really on their radar because he was charming and he was someone that they didn't really think would kill someone, which is stupid. So the FBI was kind of stuck. They didn't know who did this. So they were kind of going back and they're like, okay, let's question the same people again. Maybe we could find some inconsistencies. So they ended up going back, and a person that they wanted to talk to again was Carrie. They ended up finding him because he ended up leaving after he was questioned the first time because he was like, oh, there's a lot of FBI here. It's getting sketchy. So he ended up leaving, and they ended up finding him at Laguna del Sol nudist camp in Woolton, California on July 24th, a couple days after the murder of Joey. And for whatever reason, that day, Carrie just confessed. But before he confessed to the FBI, he wanted to see child pornography. He wanted them to show him child pornography in exchange for his confession. But obviously, the cops aren't going to show that.
Ew, bro.
Yeah, it was so disgusting.
That's and like, I can't, bro.
Yeah, the FBI was basically like, fuck you, you know, and like, you're a fucking disgusting pig. We're not going to show you that shit. They ended up convincing him to just confess. Like, they got him to confess. And he confessed to the murder, and he said enough detail where they believed him.
Right.
So he was arrested and charged for the murders of Carol, Julie, Sylvina, and Joey. And he ended up pleading not guilty for reason of insanity. And his lawyers tried to argue that the reason that he was insane and committed this crime was because he suffered sexual abuse and he had mental illnesses. But again, this does not justify him going out and killing brutally fucking murdering women. Of course,
abused, like when he was younger.
I don't know. I couldn't really find more information on that. Maybe he was. I don't know. Right. I don't know his situation. I don't know his life.
Right.
But I don't think that that's an explanation or justification to go out and kill.
Right. Right.
So I don't know. I couldn't really find much on it. I just know that that was the reason why the lawyers had said that he was mentally insane and or mentally unstable to stand trial.
Was this after Stephen was found?
Yes. This was a couple years later. Like, I think Stephen had just recently passed. Or it was a couple years after he passed, because this was in 1999 and Stephen passed in 89, right? So it was like 10 years after.
Oh, dang.
Okay. They did evaluate him for his mental, to make sure that he was capable to stand trial. And they did find that he was sane. So he was able to stand trial. And he ended up being found guilty, obviously, being found guilty of the murders, and he was convicted to death. He got the death penalty. In California, I don't know if you guys know, but the death penalty isn't really done anymore in California, and executions haven't been done since 2006. He's currently serving his death sentence in death row in San Quentin Penitentiary in California.
He's still alive?
He's still alive, yeah.
Holy shit.
We want to focus on Steven because he's the true hero in that family.
Did you find out about the parents, though? How the parents kind of... I am kind of worried about the parents. I'm like, dang.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're going through it, but I don't think that they ever made a comment about Carrie because, he's a serial killer. They obviously don't want to comment that. And I feel parents have gone through so much trauma, and Carrie just added even more, you know, and it's so fucked up.
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind was like the parents, and I'm like, oh.
Two very different people.
You're right. This is a hard case.
It was a very hard case, honestly.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was hard to read and research and talk about. But thank you guys for listening.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. It's pretty late out here. It's almost going to be midnight. So we're going to call it a day. And thank you again, everyone, for tuning in for this episode. This was a very heavy one.
Yes.
we've done some heavy ones in the past. Yeah, but you know, we like talking about these crime cases because, again, we are a spooky podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to kind of, you know, state my theories on these things. Definitely this one was a roller coaster of emotions, because I went from being like, oh my god, you know, this is a good thing that Steven and Timothy were able to escape, and thank god they were, and how piece of shit Kenneth ended up, and obviously Carrie. But again, we're not, this is not about them, this is about the heroes, and it's always going to be about the heroes. I hope you guys like this episode. Once again, you guys can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Our link tree is on our Instagram, which is another spooky podcast, Twitter, a spooky podcast. And you can send us any recommendations, or if you guys just want to chit chat with us, you guys can hit us up on aspookypodcast@gmail.com. We'll love to hear from you guys, and thank you guys so much for tuning in once again.
Oh, thank you to Ramon, and make sure to follow his Spotify.
Yes.
Again, his information will be linked in the bio, so shout out to him. Thank you again.
Yes, thank you everyone who has continued to show us support. But anyways, hopefully you guys have an awesome week. See you guys next time, spooky friends.
Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.